This is Maria Buyukos.
And this is Zachary Richard Hill.
And you're listening to Creative Honey.
Hey guys, we have a special treat for you guys today, especially for designers that are looking to learn more about the world of print and how to approach the printing process. Our guest today is Marina Joyce. She is a print expert and designer who founded Intaglio, which was one of the 50 fastest growing print companies in the country. And she's recently written a book called Designing for Print, which will be kickstarted through Kickstarter, of course. And we're going to definitely give you guys information on that. But we're very excited to have her on the show today.
Yeah, she's a great resource. She is a total pro in this field, and there is definitely a lot to learn from this lovely lady. So we're really excited to get into this interview. Stay tuned. And welcome back to Creative Honey. Today, we have a very special guest. Her name is Marina Joyce, and she's a designer and print expert. Hey, Marina. Welcome to the
show. Good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing great.
Good. How are you?
Good.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. We have a lot of questions for you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, great. Yeah, we're definitely excited to learn as much as we can about the print world, you know, because I think a lot of young designers with all the computer and a UI, UX and the digital, you know, they're not always getting taught some of the basics about, you know, press check and handling print, you know, so we're excited to kind of dive into some of that stuff.
Well, that's great. Yeah. It's not just young designers. It's older designers too. You know, you have this since, software came out, a lot of people are self-taught.
Right.
And it's really hard to teach yourself that part of it. Unless you're teaching yourself on live print jobs, and that's where it gets a little hairy.
I can imagine for sure, you know, because that's something I've personally kind of experienced, like the hairy situations for sure. Before we kind of get going on some of those topics, can you give us a little bit about, you know, your origin story, your background? How did you get to become this print expert? And you know, what's your story like?
Well, I owned a design to print company for 20 years. And I had done a bunch of startups for a holding company. And my printer came to me, and I did all the design and marketing for all the subsidiaries. And my printer came to me and said, I'm retiring. Do you want to buy my company? And I thought, wow, I really love printing. And I said, yeah. So I bought his company not knowing a thing about printing.
Nice.
It was pretty thrilling.
right, I can imagine.
So it was, you know, I was shocked at how much I didn't know. I had been buying print for years, I had been designing print for years, and I didn't know anything about printing. So I learned as the years went by, and I had a design to print company, which was very unusual. I started that company in 1991. Wow. And at that time, I was the only company that I knew of that did that. But I really saw an opportunity for smaller companies that didn't have an in-house designer or weren't working with an agency to get some help on the whole project. And the company did really well. It was very exciting. It was, wow. it was a great thing to have.
Great.
That's awesome. Print seems like it just has its own little microcosm, and there's so many little things to learn about it that not a lot of designers always realize. We heard you have an amazing book out called Designing for Print. And
can you tell us a little bit about that project and, you know, what basically just how that came about and what you plan to do with that book?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. So that came about because a good friend of mine has been teaching a course at UCLA extension. They have a design, graphic design certification program that you can do through UCLA Extension. And at that time, he had a student who was the head of the student AIGA chapter for Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And they came to me and she said, you know, we don't know anything about print.
Right.
Would you come do a presentation? And I said, sure. So I did a nighttime presentation to, I think, almost the entire graphic design group. It was, I don't know, 80 people, something like that.
Cool.
And I did this presentation. It was a few hours, a seminar, whatever you want to call it. And afterwards, every single person came up to me and said, we need a class. We need a class. We're not getting this stuff.
We aren't.
So I thought, okay, I'll put together a syllabus and I'll pitch UCLA to do a class. And I'm starting to write on the syllabus and it's a lot harder than it seems. Mm-hmm. I thought it would take a couple hours. And hours and hours and hours and hours into it, I'm thinking, well, I have a table of contents of a book.
Wow.
I'll just write the book for the class, thinking it wouldn't take that long. But I was running a company and I'm a mom, so it took a while. And then I sold my company and I could really work on it at least part-time for a few years. So that took roughly 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm done.
Wow.
And yeah, congrats. So
the seed was that seminar, and I built the book so that the first section, I call it Jumpstart, and it's immediate answers to projects that you're working on right now. And I chose identity systems because it seems to me that the most new designers that we had coming into our company to have a print project realized for their clients, it was a business card, or it was letterhead, or it was an envelope. It was a startup business and they, instead of hiring, you know, a designer, they'd go to a friend that was a student or a niece or a daughter, you know, whatever. So it seemed to be the kind of project that most designers handled first. So that's the beginning of the book, and it's immediate answers. And that whole kind of section is designed so that if you're working on a project, you can go to that type of project and immediately see the most important things to keep in mind, or the things that will cause absolute problems, mm-hmm. or what's going to make this business card insanely expensive to print.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
So it sounds like to me the book is almost kind of like a manual for printing, right? Just, you know, kind of diving into the do's and don'ts and what will cost what, and a little bit of is it a little bit of a how to, or what are the highlights you think that come out of the book, you know, for, you know, designers that would be interested in picking this up?
Well, there's a couple things that I tried to accomplish, a few. One was to get designers to realize that designing for print is not at all like designing for web or another digital application.
Right.
It's completely different. Not only that, but there are different considerations based on the type of printing. So we see this revival in letterpress. Mm-hmm. I had to start handling letterpress projects.
Right.
And there was this whole nother learning curve for letterpress. And there's that same learning curve for Flexo or for offset web versus sheet fed. There's the same learning curve for digital. And then what kind of digital press is it? Is it roll fed? Is it sheet fed? Is it dry toner? Is it liquid toner? It's kind of amazing. And what's happening today is we have more printing processes in use than ever before.
Wow.
So if you think about it, in the 1950s, we had offset, sheet fed, and web, and we had letterpress, and we had Flexo. And that's it.
Wow.
Wow. So, you know, how is the influx of options changed the print world then? Has it increased the opportunities and possibilities for designers to create new kind of things in the print world?
Absolutely. There are more cool things happening now than ever before, and you can mix techniques. which is pretty awesome. Well, except for digital, there's some limitations there, but which I cover in the book. But what I see the most is that designers will take an idea and they'll build it and they'll show it to the client and the client loves it and then they bring it in and you know what? You can't do it.
Wow.
You can't do it. You can build it in InDesign, but it's actually something that is non-producible.
Wow.
So I'll give you an example. If you want an example.
Absolutely. Yes, please. Of course.
Yeah. A client designed, so this is a high-end Los Angeles, actually worldwide entertainment firm, and they designed a set of internal stationery that was being produced on this incredible Italian paper, which I helped source and spec for them. And it had a border. So there's like a 4x6, 4.5, 6.5 note card. And it had a border that was not quite half an inch all the way around the card in a solid. And the card was going to be letterpressed. And I knew it was going to be letterpressed. And I take it to my letterpress guy. And he says, we can't letterpress this.
Wow.
Wow.
And I said, what? And he said, well, first of all, you're asking for an exact match to this Pantone. And letterpress inks are completely different from sheet fed inks. So we can't mix, we can't get it to the same exact color as you can on sheet fed. And I'm like, oh my God. And then he goes, and the way letterpress works, and this is I touch on this in the book, but I don't really cover it because there are so many excellent books out there about how printing presses work.
Mm-hmm.
But so, and if you're really interested, you can go learn about that kind of stuff. But as a designer, kind of what you need to know, and this is what I talk about, is for a sheet fed press, that a sheet fed press can have anywhere from 10 to 40 inking rollers. So these are rollers that take the ink out of the fountain and kind of mush it up and spread it around and get it all nice and even to this even thickness and then lays it down on the plate. And on a high-end sheet fed press, you can have 12 rollers hitting that plate.
Wow, yeah.
And so because of that, you're able to print beautiful solids that match from the left corner, top left corner, to the bottom right corner, and the bottom left corner to the, you know, it's completely perfect all the way across the sheet. I don't know if you've been to any letterpress demonstrations, but the way letterpress works there's a metal plate, and you've seen those old letterpress metal type locked up in a chase.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's kind of like that. And then the ink roller rolls over it, lays down a sheet of ink on the raised surfaces of the type. And then the paper goes down on it, and then the paper comes up. So there's one pass of that roller, or in some cases, it's by hand. People are inking that plate by hand with an inking roller. So there's no way to get it even.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
It's not going to be, and ink is transparent. So if it's not the same exact film thickness is how we refer to it, if it's not exactly the same film thickness all the way across, that color is going to vary. Where the film is thicker, the color is going to be darker. Mm. And where it's thinner, the color is going to be lighter. So, you know, I had to go back to the client and say, we can't letterpress this.
Right.
And they were really disappointed, and they wanted that look. So what we ended up doing was letterpressing the type, running the PMS to match the letterpress color, which is very easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then embossing the sheet-fed litho part of the project to look like it was letterpressed.
That is clever.
Yeah, I was literally going to ask, so what was the solution? And that's a great solution. Wow. Yeah,
But that's an expensive solution.
Yes.
And that's a deep pockets company. So
right.
If you're a young designer and now you have to go back to your client and say, you know what, it's going to be four times as much.
Yeah, and some clients would probably not like that too much.
The business is your uncle's startup.
Yeah.
You know, or you're fresh out of school and it's the coffee shop down the street who's giving you the opportunity and
right.
a few a few hundred bucks, right? It's pretty tough because now as a designer, you've got to go back, you've got to redesign it. You've got to take that concept off the table and you have to say, I need to redo this because we can't produce this concept. And then who's going to pay for that?
Right.
Well, you're going to pay for it. The designer's going to pay for it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, so would you recommend that designers kind of, before they start a project, kind of keep these things in mind when they're even coming up with the concepts? Should they find out about the costs and the expenses of printing certain things before they, you know, even present a concept to a client?
Absolutely. Especially if you're working on something that you've never worked on before, or a printing method. Let's say you want to add in engraving to a project or foil stamping. You really need to talk to your printer or buy my book.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely, definitely buy the book. And we're looking forward to buying the book and checking it out as well.
Yeah.
So
where can you get your book? Is it available on multiple websites, or how does that work?
It'll be available after the Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a book about printing, I really can't do a digital book.
Gotcha.
There's too many techniques that aren't going to showcase in there, like high fidelity printing, which is CMYK plus touch plates. Those touch plates can be orange or green or red. Those are colors that are kind of out of gamut in regular sheet fed CMYK printing. So you do an additional plate that's all planned in pre-press, and these amazing color guys, you know, do that. So that's going to be in the book, and you can't really show that. You can't at all show that with digital printing. So after the Kickstarter, the book will be available, because the Kickstarter is going to get me to a volume that I can go on press and print it.
Awesome.
So,
and
yeah,
we'll definitely, you know, have the Kickstarter in the show notes, and we'll talk about it in the, you know, post-production notes. Maria has a question for you.
Yeah, no, so you'd mentioned that your book's gonna actually showcase a number of techniques. I think that's super awesome, and it got me thinking, what are some of your favorite techniques that, after working with all these different ones over the years?
Oh man. That's a hard question to answer, and I'm gonna tell you why. Because as my, you know, I'm a designer, you guys are designers, you think visually.
Right.
And as these projects are flipping through my mind, it's always the design that's my favorite thing.
Oh,
that's great.
It kind of really doesn't matter what technique you use if the design is flat.
Great point.
Yeah. Right.
So what printers, you know, what printing techniques do is they can take that design to the nth.
Mm-hmm.
To its peak, to where it really shines. And that's, you know, that's why you need a good printer, so that you have that kind of relationship. It's kind of impossible to know as a designer everything that's available or how something's going to affect this thing that you've created. But what I've noticed in my career is the higher up you go in terms of the client knowledge, one of the most knowledgeable designers I ever worked with was one of the partners at Pentagram.
Wow.
And I was just blown away by how much he knew about print.
Right. I can imagine that would work out that way at Pentagram. Yeah.
Well, I think that what the way it used to be taught, or the way art used to be put together on art boards with paste up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I don't know how old you guys are, but I guess I'm going to guess that you've never seen that.
Yeah. I did a little bit with Michael, but no, most of them pretty much no. Yeah.
So back before, I was going to say InDesign 1.0, but it's really Quark Express 1.0, because InDesign wasn't even there yet.
Right.
And when it launched, it was launched as the Quark Killer.
Wow.
And,
yeah,
that's cool. And Adobe's plan was to annihilate that program, which they pretty much did.
Yeah, but Adobe's kind of taking over the design world. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah.
I have kind of a good apocryphal story about that. So when InDesign launched, we were all pretty stressed out. We were all like, oh my God, another software program, another update, you know? And we were using PageMaker. PageMaker was great, and Quark was okay. And But Cork was really the 500-pound gorilla. And so here it comes InDesign, and this paper guy comes into my office, and he goes, God, you know what I heard? I heard that Adobe's giving Disney it for free.
Oh. Wow.
Not only are they giving Disney the software for free for all of their designers and all of their locations all around the world, but they're giving them the entire font library with it.
Wow.
So that they'll switch everything from Cork. Now, I have no idea if this story is true.
Yeah, that's pretty serious, though. Yeah,
but it's the story that went around town. And Disney's a big player in this town, so.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of printers and a lot of designers are working with them in one way or another.
Right.
And I just kind of lost track of the question that Maria asked.
Oh, I think
Well, we could actually probably pivot.
Yeah,
because that was a great story, and actually it made me think about, I think we were talking about a little bit about, you know, mistakes or the knowledge that comes with or the lack thereof, you know, with printing. Like you experience a great knowledge with the partner at Pentagram. So that led me to the question, what are some common mistakes designers or people you come across make when they're approaching a printing project, and how can that cost them, you know, in both dollars and otherwise?
The most common mistake is thinking that the printed thing is going to look like the thing that came out of your desktop printer.
Right.
That's absolutely the most common mistake. There's an expectation created with your 8-color Epson that you put on the premium Epson paper, which is designed to showcase those inks. And then you folded it and cut it by hand and showed it to your client, and they loved it. And then now it's time to print it. And it's not going to look anything like that because you're not using 8 inks. You're using 4. So there's that, the wrong proofing workflow. There's printing solids, and, you know, ink is a film thickness. It's a physical thing. And scoring through ink cracks the ink. It cuts the ink. So there's, you know, there's things you can do to mitigate cracking on a fold, but you kind of have to know what you're doing. And if you show your design to your printer will know and be able to give you some tips if you really have to have a fold going through a solid. Mm. That's one thing. Sizes. One of the things I really cover in my book is how much waste there is on, say, an 8x8-inch brochure. The amount of paper waste is astronomical.
Wow.
And you might think to yourself, well, okay, so there's more paper waste, but paper waste translates into dollars because that means you have to buy more paper.
Mm-hmm.
So paper comes in these sizes, which I didn't know when I bought my company. It comes in parent sizes. And these are very standardized, and you don't, when you're printing an 8x8 brochure, you don't get an 8x8 piece of paper. You get a 23x35-inch or 25x38-inch piece of paper. And so what I've got in the book in the paper section are these diagrams of just how much waste there is once you deviate off the 8.5x11 dimensions. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why 8.5x11 works and is so cost-effective. And it's because the paper sizes, the parent sizes, are built around that 8.5x11 finish size.
Oh. Okay.
And you can still do cool things. You can still have an 8x8. Just it's going to cost a lot more. You know, that's the only thing you've got to keep in mind.
No, I've actually heard one of my favorite designers kind of talk about that a little bit, why there are certain standard sizes when it comes to printing things, because it does affect, you know, the use of paper and how much it costs, like you're saying. So now I'm really glad you kind of went into the details of that, because I've always kind of found that a little bit interesting. I didn't know entirely why, so I'm kind of glad we're diving into that, which kind of leads into another question is, or really a topic is, we kind of have a point here. Why is specifying paper, and why is choosing paper more of a science than an art? Because I think maybe many designers think it's more art than science, but it's really the other way around.
Well, it's definitely both. And I would say it's almost equally both.
Oh, great.
Because the art part of it is what you want, right? It's what the designer's seen mm-hmm. in their mind's eye. And that's really important. You know, designers have ideas, and those ideas are what we want to make happen. And if you don't know what you're doing when you're specifying paper, you are eliminating your vision right there. Wow. So knowing about the science part of it is going to help you keep the art part of it. And that's differences like coated versus uncoated, smooth versus vellum versus laid versus linen. Linen's a highly textured paper, but that texture is embossed into the paper. So it has superior ink holdout over, say, laid.
Mm-hmm.
A laid pattern is not pressed into the paper. It's made because of the wire that the paper's made on, and it produces that laid pattern. But that laid pattern is going to affect the texture of the image, and it's going to kind of blur it out a little bit. So if you want texture and you want sharp, you need to use linen, you know, or stipple, yeah, little things like that.
Right, right.
And I think that...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Kind of the meat of it is all this stuff is not brain surgery.
Right.
It's really not that complicated. And this is the question from Maria that I got off on the tangent on, which is designers used to be taught how printing works, because they had to design in layers.
Mm-hmm.
That you had to design and paste up the cyan layer, the magenta layer, the PMS spot red layer. And just by building the artwork, you were building something to print.
Wow. Right, that makes sense.
And in design, you're just slapping it all onto a page.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's no concept of layering. So as we transitioned into desktop software, that knowledge wasn't being taught anymore because there was no point.
Yeah.
Right? Why should you know how to do paste up or color separations or how to trap with a camera? That's ridiculous. We don't have to do that anymore.
Right, right.
But you kind of have to know how it goes together. That part's still important. So that the mechanical part of the design instruction dropped off. And then I think what happened is they started giving these designers print production courses, which are incredibly technical and very boring. And if you aren't a print aficionado, you're just going to, you know, your eyes are going to roll in the back of your head in class and you're going to go to sleep. So there really wasn't anything in between.
Right.
And that's where I kind of came in. I'm like, wow, you know, designers really need to know this stuff, and they don't need to know it from the point of view of a print production person. They just need to know it from the point of view of a designer.
Yeah, they need to have that knowledge from a designer's perspective, but not necessarily a printer's perspective. So I think a kind of a main thing is being able to partner and have the right kind of conversation with a printing partner. I think that's kind of what you're talking about, right?
Absolutely. And in my book, I have a section called Working with Printers, and that's getting estimates, press checks, and there's also a section on your workflow. Because I'm a designer too, I know I've had one foot on each side of this. So what I've done is I've built, you know, when you're doing this with your client, you need to be doing this with your printer. So when you're talking about your concept with the client and you're building the idea of, let's say it's a brochure of what this brochure is going to be like, you take that conversation to your printer and you go, here's what we're thinking about. And even at that stage, the printer is going to be able to make recommendations about size and paper.
Right.
You could be sitting there in this meeting going, we want this brochure to be big. We want it to be tabloid. We want it, you know, to make an impression after this trade show. And your printer might go, but you want it priced in this range? This is your budget? That's not going to happen with something that big.
Yeah, no, it definitely seems like the real key to successful print is really the collaboration between the two, being consistent from beginning to end. And yeah, especially like younger designers, they don't always have partnerships with printers yet. They're still kind of emerging and figuring all that out. What are the steps to choosing a printing partner?
That's a really good question. Because I kind of know, you know, once you have a printer identified, where to go from there. Mm-hmm. But ask people you know for recommendations first. Mm-hmm. Who are you using? And then the other part of that question is, and what are they printing for you?
Right.
Then there's Printing Industries of America has a chapter in Southern California, and they have a national website of a database of printers where you can go in and you can say, I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, and I need a printer that specializes in 8-color.
Hmm.
And it'll search the database and it'll come up with printers who specialize in 8-color in the Nashville area. So that's pretty cool. And that's printaccess.org is that website.
Awesome. We'll definitely post that in the show notes. That's really cool.
You know, I've been seeing a lot of those kind of questions happening in Facebook groups, you know, other social media environments. And most of it seems to be the kind of thing is, I'm a web designer and I have to work on this print project. Can anyone recommend a printer?
Yeah, that sounds about right, actually. Yeah.
Happens quite a bit, yeah.
And that happens all the time. And, you know, as digital and web kind of took over, we saw that a lot in my company, whereas we've got these designers showing up who have never worked in anything other than RGB.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's wow. I didn't realize it was that bad. I mean, I work in mostly RGB because I do mostly digital, but I have a basic understanding of how to switch over at least, yeah, to CMYK or to think as a printer a little bit. Yeah.
I did a blog post a few weeks ago on choosing a logo that's going to work in RGB and CMYK.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great.
That's
because there's so many designers who do a logo for a website.
Yep.
Right?
That's
so
true.
Here's a startup. You need a website. That's the first thing you're going to ask for.
Yeah.
And they specified an RGB that is absolutely not producible in print.
Right.
And they're freaking out. They're like, how am I going to tell my client that we can't get the shade of green on their letterhead?
That literally happened to me with green. My first time printing a business card when I was actually in architecture school, I didn't know about CMYK printers. And I went to get a business card made and the green came out totally different. And the printer was nice enough to find a similar shade in green. Thankfully it worked, but that was my first big like slap in the face. Like, wake up, there's CMYK, honey.
It's pretty crazy. You know, on that blog post, I put a graphic of the gamut diagram that shows all the colors visible to our eyeballs.
Wow.
Which cool. You can't really see on a monitor, but you know, it's a representational drawing. And the next circle in is high fidelity printing, or actually the next circle in is Pantone, all the colors recommended by the Pantone solid universe. And then within that is high fidelity printing. And then within that is RGB. And then within that is CMYK.
That's so cool.
Wow.
So if you look at that gamut diagram and you choose a color that is in both the RGB and CMYK spaces, you're going to be fine. Okay. But if you choose one that's outside the CMYK or the Pantone, but still in the RGB, you're going to have a problem.
Right.
Wow. All of a sudden, my printing mistakes are making sense.
Well, I think this actually is a perfect segue to my next question, is how can designers set up their design files or their design projects to kind of ensure a project prints, you know, the correct way?
Well, you know, it's not really setting up their files, because files will only do what you tell them to do.
Right.
The way to make sure that things are really going to print well, especially from a color standpoint, is to know your color systems. Mm-hmm. You just really need to learn about that. And, you know, it's not really hard and it's not really complicated, but you need to spend some time knowing what is Pantone, what is CMYK, what is high fidelity, and how does this all relate to RGB? Within that, there's JPEG, TIFF, PNG, and knowing these EPS, knowing these file types, and knowing what they're for.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if I can just please beg anyone who's listening to this to not use Photoshop to lay out a brochure.
Oh, yeah.
Amen. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I mean, I am not a print expert, but I know, like, please, like, you know, Michael is my first design teacher. We interviewed him a couple weeks ago, and he always would say, think about what each of these software tools are for. It says Photoshop in the software. It's for photo manipulation, right? I mean, it's like, I totally agree. And I think it goes back to what, you know, I think web guys, you know, are used to mostly using Photoshop for pretty much everything, you know? Right. So I think that's a good point you bring up, that we need to know which software tool is used for what thing, right?
Absolutely. You know, basically, if you're going to be print, you're going to be design, you're going to be working on that in InDesign.
Right.
Period. You're going to use Photoshop for your photos. You're going to use Illustrator for your illustrations. That includes logos, because a logo is an illustration, not a photo.
Yes, absolutely.
It's got to be an EPS file that is constructed in a native EPS application like Illustrator, not a Photoshop file saved as an EPS. And, you know, you're going to pull those things together in InDesign, and that's what you're going to hand to the printer. We have, you know, I came across this thing, a little meme that said, this guy's been doing these great things, things that graphic designers know, and it says, the meme says, I just sent you the logo. It's in Word. Is that okay?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Oh, actually, it was, I just sent you the high-res logo. It's in Word. Is that okay?
Yeah. It's like, absolutely not. But thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, that's when that's a red flag to run really fast away from the project, because it's only going to get worse from there.
Oh, yeah. My God. It totally. But you have clients. You have companies with 100 employees, and I'm telling you, the person you're working with is going to say, I can send you our logo in Word. It's the only place we have it.
That's scary. I mean, for a company of that scale and size, that they don't have, you know, their identity system in, you know, in where it's readable for software.
That's concerning.
Yeah, that is very concerning. You know, I'm glad we're talking about this, because hopefully we could change the world in the corporate sphere, where we could help them by eliminating Word in the graphic design world. Hopefully we're going to do that someday.
We need the Word killer like we had the Word killer.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great.
I'm all for that. Yes. Yes.
You know, I wonder if there's a Word gripe forum, because I need to sign up.
Oh, yeah. Probably on Reddit or something.
Someplace where, exactly, where you can just go bitch about how bad it is.
There should be, like, a Reddit just for, like, designers, so we could just complain and post funny memes.
Yeah,
those two things.
That pent-up aggression can't be healthy, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I actually have can you tell us a little more about print dummies and why one might want to consider ordering one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, so a dummy is your project, whatever it is, made out of paper with no printing on it. But it's made out of the exact paper that you're specifying. So if you're thinking of, you know, something as simple as a business card, you're looking at a swatch book and you like that 100-pound Classic Crest cover. So you call your printer and you ask for a dummy to show your client. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're, you know, vacillating between the 100-pound and the 120-pound. And that's really hard to gauge from a swatch book. You've got this piece of paper that's stapled in. And
right.
I do have a, a blog post on how to use this watchbook and how to read them, because that can be really confusing. And until you're holding that card in your hand, you really cannot experience it. I think a lot of designers that are starting out will see something and they'll say, well, you know, let's just make it like that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they're looking at a greeting card and they're wanting to use it for a direct mail thing. And it looks good there and it's working great as that greeting card, but it's kind of falling apart on the mail side. Printers make dummies all the time. We get them from the paper companies. Mm-hmm. So we're, you know, if sometimes we make them, but most often they're made by the paper companies. We make a phone call and they send it to us and we send it to the client. It's not a cost item on either end, and they're fantastic. It's really the only way to tell or to compare how something's going to feel. And that might sound a little, you know, like kindergarten-ish, but when you're talking about print, you're talking about the tactile. That's what print is.
Absolutely. Yep.
It's the touch. So I'm a big believer in dummies. I'm a big believer in dummying everything.
Well, I think it just goes back to the details, right? And you know, just being involved in every step of the process, especially when it comes to bigger jobs, right? When there's a lot of, you know, money on the line. And you know, I've heard of the horror stories, you know, when you put, you know, you send something to print and it happens and you've paid for it, and then a designer or a client freaks out, right? Because it didn't turn out the way they were imagining it. So I'm assuming that it's always best to have as much information, you know, available to you and knowing as much as you can before something goes to print, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's going to be my next book. My next book is going to be, you know, the business of designing, because awesome. There's all kinds of things you want to do too. When you're taking your client down this path, you need to show dummies, you need to show proofs, you need to, there's steps in presenting logos.
Right.
You know, I was talking to someone a few months ago who had shown the first logo concepts to her client all in color.
Oh, that's a no-no.
So not only were they, the poor client was not only looking at type and forms and symbols, but now also colors. And that's just completely overwhelming totally. For a non-visual person.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of have to take them down a path. And it's the same thing with the paper. Maria, another reason for ordering dummies is because sometimes there's going to be a problem and it's caught at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So you could design something, let's say it's a booklet that's going to staple. So it's going to saddle stitch on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's got some big solids in there. Paper has grain. It has a direction. And when you fold it with the grain, it folds really smoothly. Mm-hmm. And when you fold it against the grain, it fights you like crazy. It's going to crack. It's going to buckle.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard a little bit about
this. I've seen that happen. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks really, really bad. Another thing about grain is it adds strength. So a business card cut with the grain, 3.5-inch edge, or grain short on the 2-inch edge, those two cards are going to feel very different.
Wow.
Yeah. And it has to do with the stiffness, because the stiffness is affected by the grain direction. So that dummy can catch a problem like that, where you'll give specs to your printer, and let's say they had already seen a PDF, and they're like, oh, wait, hold on. You want to run it on this kind of paper? Well, you're going to have a problem with the grain direction. So now you know. And because the printer would have made that dummy according to standards of grain direction, which means it would have been on the stapling edge or the long edge. But because they saw a preliminary of the design, they know that the grain is running in the opposite direction.
Wow.
Again, it's all about the details.
Fascinating, yeah. Wow. Like, I really, you know, it seems like there's just, it's really like designing with purpose, you know, and it brings it back to like having really thoughtful designs and imagining the whole process. And it's like a responsibility, you know, to ensure the product is of the highest quality. And I really doubt that many designers nowadays know all these complex details, but they're amazing. They're, I mean, it just adds so much strength to a design knowing all this.
You know, it does. And I think when you're listening to it in a conversation like we're having, it can seem a little overwhelming. Oh my God, there's so many things that I need to know.
Right.
But not all those things come to bear in one project.
Right.
You know, it might be just one of those things. And it's not like this list goes on, and we're only touching on the tip of the iceberg in this conversation. This is like the meat of it in this conversation. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole bunch of different things, but the things that are, they're important. They're important to know. And I've had designers walk in and I've had to tell them we can't make this.
Wow.
At all.
Right. Well, on that note, since we're kind of running up on time here a little bit, like, do you have one of our closing questions is, do you have any kind of advice for young designers, either with print or in general? Because we do, most of our listeners are emerging or kind of just getting their career started. So do you have any advice for them?
In terms of just general?
Yeah, either specifically in the print world or just how to approach their design work in general. Because I know you're both a print expert and a designer. So I think you have probably a lot to offer on this question, I hope. Yeah.
I think my advice is stay strong, love your craft, don't give up. It's not gloom and doom. Just love your craft and you're going to do great, because it all kind of comes from that.
That's awesome.
No, I think that's a really good point, and I completely agree. I've noticed, you know, the big difference between designers that thrive and designers that maybe don't or struggling is the love. I know that like the do what you love kind of cliche is maybe a little overused, but I think it's really, there's something to it, I think, especially in the design and creative world. So I'm really glad that you pointed that out for sure.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, there's so much information out there right now about every facet of our lives. You know, as a designer, you're bombarded with this, with that, with, you know, all these blogs and the celebrity designers and the wannabe celebrity right. designers and their look and trends. And to that, you have to be present and you need to do your yoga every day and you need to meditate and you need to eat right. And you need to get your workouts in, and it's just
and be like a normal human, basically, and yeah, and live, yeah. No, I completely agree, absolutely. And, you know, we are so grateful that you came on the show today. We learned a lot. I think this is really important information for designers to think about and consider. And like you said, it might seem overwhelming when, you know, you're listening to this on a podcast, but I still think it could at least help a lot of designers start thinking about some of these things, if nothing else. So yeah, we thank you again for coming on. And before we let you go, can you let our listeners know where to find you on social media or the internet or your blog, or how can we find you out there?
I have a website, designingforprint.com, and at that location, there's a blog which covers print related design issues, pretty much the kind of stuff that's in the book. And so there's all my contact information is there. I have a Facebook page, Designing for Print, and Designing Print at Twitter. So it's pretty much everywhere. You'll find me trying to get the word out.
which I'm glad that you are. That's really awesome.
And we'd be more than happy to help get the word out. I think we're very excited to get your book in our hands. We really want to see it get funded.
We will make sure that Kickstarter gets promoted for sure.
That makes my heart feel so warm. You birth something and you want people to want it and like it and for it to find a home out there in the universe. So thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. No problem. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, one more time, thanks again, Marina. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, guys. This is a great podcast. I've really enjoyed listening
to
the stuff that you guys make.
That's very sweet of you to say.
Yeah. All right. You guys have a good day.
You too.
You too.
Okay, bye.
Marina, thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to interview you today. That was very enlightening.
We definitely learned a lot today, and that's a lot of fun for us. Every time we bring on a guest, we want to learn something, and that definitely happened today. So thank you so much, Marina. And thank you guys for listening to the show. We're really, blown away by how much it's growing every week, and we're really excited to give you guys more content both on our website and with the podcast. So on that note, you can find us on our website, creativehoney.org, and on Twitter, Instagram, Stitcher, iTunes, and SoundCloud.
And if you're into Facebook, we're on there too.
That is true. I forgot about Facebook. So yeah, we're just search Creative Honey. We're there. And you can find us on our own individual platforms. I work for Active Color, a digital and branding studio that provides solutions in both of those realms. So if you're looking for something like that, you can find us at activecolor.com. I also have some samples of my individual work at zrhill.com. And you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Dribbble as Zachary R. Hill.
And I'm doing my own little design thing right now. And if you'd like to check out my work, you can find it at mariabuyukos.com. My last name is spelled BOUGIOUKOS.com. And I can take a deep breath because that's really long. Anyway, so you could also find me very easily on Instagram, and it's at Maria_Fofia. You can also check me out on Twitter and Dribbble as well under my full name. And we really appreciate everything. Thank you so much for the awesome reviews you've been giving us. And we just wanted to say also that we are super, super excited for when Marina's book comes out, and you guys should definitely buy it.
Yes, absolutely. I cannot agree more. That's like number one on my Christmas list, I think. So thanks, guys, for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.